Bhogante Muhuravrittin Yeteshavatyantihi Mahadi Gatakechin Uchante Ramanasaha. But when their enjoyment ends, all these persons must return to this mundane earth. Only a select few of those who have reached the planets of Mahar and beyond are liberated along with Brahma. Commentary. Materially ambitious people must accept repeated births. Among them, persons dedicated exclusively to prescribed Vedic duties can achieve liberation when they finish enjoying the results of their good work. For persons whose renunciation is incomplete,
Archer Adi read this.
Kechit kamen uchante bhogam bhukta archer adi shu lavyante yastro sadhyo bhaktim parahye. Some persons enjoy pleasures in upper regions like the realm of fire and attain liberation gradually in stages. And ascetics fully devoted to spiritual knowledge quickly attain liberation. Commentary. Expert practitioners of yoga can follow the Archer Adi path. The first destination on this path is Archis, or the region moved by the fire, by the god of fire. Beyond Archis are other regions, such as the circle of Shishumar. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Sukadeva Goswami elaborates on yogi's process on the Archer Adi path. Vaishvana Ramyati Vihaya Sarvata Shushumaya Brahma Patena Sochisha Vidyuta Kalko Tahare Dashta Prayati Chakram Nirita Shaishumaram. O King, when a mystic passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Shishumna to reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the day of fire, where he becomes completely cleansed of all contamination. And thereafter, he still goes higher to the circle of Shishumar to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. Tadvishvanadim dvativarta vishnu raniyasa virajanatmanayaka namaskritam brahma vidambupaiti kalpayusho yad vidharamante. This Shishumara is the pivot for the turning of the complete universe, and it is called the navel of Vishnu, Pravidakshaya Vishnu. The yogi alone goes beyond this circle of Shishumara and attains the planet Maharloka, where purified saints like Vridhu enjoy a duration of life of 4,300,000,000 solar years. That planet is worshipable even for the saints who are transcendentally situated. Ato anantasya mukhanalena dadayamanam sa niriksha vishvam niriyati siveshvara jishtavishnyam yadvaya paradvam tauriparameshyam. At the time of the devastation of the universe, a flame of fire emanates from the mouth of Ananta. The yogi sees all the planets of the universe burning to ashes, and thus he leaves for Satyaloka by airplanes used by the great purified souls. The duration of life in Satyaloka is calculated to be
14,480,000,000,000.
If you say 15,000,000,000,000, that's more than a trillion.
Is it?
There's billion.
Million, billion, trillion.
Yeah. And the 15.
Trillion.
No.
Yes.
There's.
Yeah.
Million, billion, trillion. You're right. 15,480,000,000,000. Nayatriyo shorukam jarana vityun nartir machodvega vityekutaschit yachchuktatodha kripayanidam didam durantadukam prabhu vandarshana. On that planet of Satyaloka, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries in the material world. Tato viseisham pratipadyam nirbhayas tenatmano napo na murtiratvaram jyotirmayo vayu petikale vayvatmanakam brihadatmalingam. After reaching Satyaloka, the devotee is specifically able to be incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body in an identity similar to that of the gross body. And one after another, he gradually attains stages of existence from earthly to watery to fiery to glowing to earthly until he reaches the ethereal stage. In other words, all these bodies look like a gross body. Somebody says, how do they change? Says, by the subtle body in an identity similar to that of the gross body. Except that it goes from the earthly, and we've got now, to become the watery, and then a fiery, and then a glowy, and an airy, and then an ethereal.
But look, each phase looks like the gross body?
Well, it says, in an identity similar to that of the gross body.
Mm-hmm.
Incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body, in an identity similar to that of the gross body, and one after another, he attains these stages of existence. Granena gandam rasanena vayasam rupam chavishya svarshanam tachayva shotrena chupetyana bhogunatvam panena chukuttim paiti yogi. The devotee thus surpasses the subtle objects of different senses, like aroma by smelling, the palate by tasting, vision by seeing forms, touch by contacting, the vibrations of the ear by ethereal identification, and the sense organs by material activities. Sabhuta sukshmendriya sanikarsham manomayam devayamam vikaryam samsara gatya sahatin jati vijnana tattvam gunasam yodam. The devotee, by surpassing the gross and subtle forms of coverings, enters the plane of egoism. There he merges the material modes of nature, ignorance, and passion in that point of neutralization, and thus reaches egoism and goodness. After this, all egoism merges in the Mahatattva, and it comes to the point of pure self-realization. Tinatmanatmanam upaiti shantam anandam anandamayo vashane itam gatim bhagavatim gatoya sadai punarneha visajjatinda. Only the purified soul can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in his constitutional state. Whoever is able to reach such devotional perfection is never again attracted by the material world, and he never returns. This is the gradual way of liberation. Paramahansas, however, are liberated immediately at the end of their current life. Bhakta Bhagavato Yetu Sakama Svicca Yakilan Bhunjana Sukta Bhogamste Vishuddha Yanti Tatpadam. But even the devotees of the personality of Godhead who still have material desires can enjoy the pleasures they wish and then become fully purified and go to the Lord's abode. Commentary. Vaishnava devotees are more elevated than non-devotee paramahansas. Even a devotee burdened by material desires is in a better position than an impersonalist free from such desires. Still, just as both karmis and gyanis are distinguished in terms of the relative freedom from material desires.
Can I just ask a question? Is there an explanation of what a non-devotee paramahansa is?
Maybe liberated, maybe free from bodily identification, purified of past karmic
reality. I always thought paramahansa was reference to Vaishnava. I didn't know there was such a designation of a non-devotee paramahansa.
Prabhupada also uses it.
Yeah.
Talks about them personally.
Mahat seva dvaram lahori yukte. Remember that first word? Mahat can be both impersonalist.
And he says either impersonalists or devotees.
Shivay Goswami said he was perfectly merged in Brahman, free from all contamination. And he heard the glory.
Well, what was specifically the word paramahansa used in relationship to his state of being? That was my question, actually.
Well, Paramahansa is a stage of sannyas, right? It's the last stage.
Bhagavadak. Different stages. Yeah, that's right. Okay. I'm good. It clicked.
Most karmis and jnanis can approach perfection only gradually. Only a few paramahansa jnanis achieve immediate liberation. Similarly, all Vaishnavas, and when the paramahansa jnanis achieve liberation, they're paramahansas. Similarly, though all Vaishnavas are sure candidates for ultimate perfection, the Sakama Bhaktas, those whose devotion to the personality of Godhead is mixed with desire to control and enjoy, must first become purified. Still, although Sakama Bhaktas need further purification to qualify for entry to the kingdom of God, they should never be considered subject to the laws of material nature like the karmis and jnanis. As stated here, Sakama Bhaktas live happily in this world, free from material restraints, so svechaya. They are at liberty to visit all the regions of this world, including the highest planets, beginning with Mahar. They can reach the subtlest stages on the Archi or Adi path, and they can attain the Vaikuntha realms within this universe, like Sweta, Vipram, Ram, and Priya. Avoiding frustration from the deficiencies and miseries that taint every material situation, Sakama Bhaktas find happiness in this world, Sukha Bhogam. Srila Sanatana Goswami uses the word bhunchana, enjoying, in a form of the present tense to indicate that even while Vaishnavas are finishing up their last enjoyment of the material world, the power of the Lord's devotional service purifies them enough to demolish all obstacles in their hearts. Their material business finished, they then achieve the Supreme Lord's eternal abode.
Even though Vaishnavas are finishing up their last enjoyment of the material world. What's an example of that?
Prabhupada said about Jayananda Prabhu, that if you have a material desire, then you'll go to the heavenly planet after 10,000 years, and you'll go back to Godhead. So the devotees have some desire. Huh? And then Krishna, he satisfies those desires in a way that the devotees won't have them anymore. So they're finishing them up.
Why should I give this full material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter at my lotus feet and make him forget. Those verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And my devotee engages in my devotional service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment. He is a fool, like a fool who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Why should I give him material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget. Then that verse in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, with him, this evidence that when one worships the Lord, filled with some desires, the Lord fulfills them in such a way that they won't come back and ask for it again.
Now, how about the case of in the 8th canto of King Indradumna, who was in his cottage meditating on the Supreme Personality of God, and didn't properly greet Agastya Muni, was cursed to be the elephant, Vijendra.
It's not so detailed. I mean, one person is certainly Kardama Muni, a great devotee, great yogi, but he has this
desire. He wanted a wife of like disposition.
He wanted a wife, but and he wanted to enjoy with her, which he did. Once the son was born, he said, "That's it, I'm gone." And he was gone. Which was interesting when he left the Supreme Lord as well with his son.
In the case of King Indradumna, it said that normally it would have taken quite a few births to go back to Godhead, but by being cursed and taking the body of Gajendra, he ended up going back to Godhead on the back of Garuda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
He was absorbed in meditation and was?
Cursed by Agastya Muni.
No, but what kind of meditation? He was just meditating, or he was actually seeing the Lord, or?
No further description given.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, either the verses or the commentaries.
But did it say that he had any desire?
Didn't go into detail about
no.
it. Except that the curse was a blessing because he went back to Godhead quickly. After just one birth as an elephant, went back to Godhead personally with a person. On the back of Garuda, I said, Lord of Vaikuntha.
And you could stretch a jambi also. This devotee wanted to enjoy when it was over. Got a little shave when he was over. He went back. And he will have to continue sadhana.
I was explaining in class Monday how devotees have a tough time with Indradumna because they could understand who, the crocodile, wanted to be a crocodile, okay? Yeah, he was sporting in the river with Gandharva ladies and went to pull one of their legs and instead pulled the leg of Devalarisi.
Kind of trouble.
Yeah, so he took birth as a crocodile, but he was killed by the Supreme Personality Godhead and reestablished as a Gandharva and then back to Godhead. So everyone can understand that, but Indradumna, he was meditating on the Supreme Personality Godhead. And
why should they have to take birth as Gajendra? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I explained that in that yuga that he's present in, it's not so easy to go back to Godhead. And by taking one birth, by the result of the curse was after birth as an elephant, he was went back to Godhead personally, escorted by the Lord of Vaikuntha. That's the real benefit. Otherwise, materially, it looks like he was shafted. But Agastya Muni actually gave him...
But he got the benediction of getting darshan of the Lord.
Yes, he got the express path back to Godhead.
Sometimes, of course, we don't know what... That's just how detailed... What's before that? What's his... Purva, earlier samskaras, earlier karma and activities. Very often there's some other type of pranic connection. But even if not, ultimately it's not what devotees say, Shiva Pinishvam, Adarshanambana. Will you embrace me or you trample me? That's why I was bringing up the point of how these eternal associates are in the position of Chota Haridas and other roles that they put in Devananda Pandit. And what's that? Sampradaya Pushti Mark.
Balabhava.
Charya, so they really seem to be, you know, Krishna, like Jai Vijay, it was my arrangement, by my arrangement that the Brahmins curse you and wanted to fight. But it's that element is certainly there, so the devotees are open to that kind of treatment.
Submission to the will of the Lord, you say.
And then there was some Gajendra had some Purva Sanskar, whether he had full remembrance, but he certainly remembered that prayer.
His prayers were to the position of the Supreme Ishvara, but he
didn't mention them by name.
Right. Therefore, the Vishwanath says that the demigod said, well, he's not calling us. He must be referring to Hari, but we all know Hari takes a long time to come rescue his devotees. So we'll see what happens to him. Stick around. He'll be waiting a long time. But then when Supreme Personality God appeared, the demigods came also because they were feeling that they had made an offense. One commentator says the demigods weren't angry that Gajendra went over their heads, but the other one says, yeah, they he's not calling us, so why should we deal with it? He's calling Hari, and Hari takes forever to appear.
And this was Hari, who was the in that Manvantara, he was...
I don't know specifically the name. I haven't... Maybe it's in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. I don't know the specific name.
I think so. I think there it's mentioned as Hari Manvantara.
Definitely the Lord of Vaikuntha, right? Riding on Garuda, right? You have Gopi's version, because that's got the commentary by Baladev Vijayaprasad. That's where all the action is, and really, it's in the commentary.
I'm quite sure that Hari was a incarnation and not coming from Vaikuntha. That's in the back of my mind. Someone reading?
The 14? Vaikuntham durlabham muktai sandrananda chiratkam nishkama yetu tad bhakta labhante sadya evatat. That abode, Vaikuntha, is made of concentrated ecstasy and pure consciousness. Even for liberated souls, it is difficult to attain. But the Lord's devotees who are free from selfish desires reach it at once. Purport. Mother Uttara now tells her son Parikshit what she understands about the transcendental nature of Vaikuntha. Parikshit has heard similar general descriptions of the Vaikuntha atmosphere from Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto and tenth cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nayatra kalo nimisham para prabhu to nu deva jagatam yadishire yatra satvam narajastamascharna vai vikaro namaham pradhanam param padam vaishnavam atmananti tad yan neti neti katad utsiskrishabha visujya dharanyam ananya sarida pido panguyaraha padam pade pade. What to speak of the celestial demigods empowered to rule over mundane creatures? In that transcendental state, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the demigods themselves. Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless, for they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee is absolute harmony with the Lord. Therefore, a pure devotee in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. Bhagavatam 2:2.17.18. Tasmai svalokam bhagavan sahajita sandarshayam asa param yaparam yapeta sankresha vimoha sandasam svajishtavadvir purushaya abhishtutam pravartate yatra rajastam astayo satvam chamishram na chakalavakrama yatra mayakim utapare hare Anuvrita yatra suras sarachita. Very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, the personality of Godhead was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. That transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all miseries and fear of illusory existence. In the spiritual world, there is neither the mode of passion, nor the mode of ignorance, nor a mixture of both, nor is there adulterated goodness, nor the influence of time or Maya itself. Only the pure devotees of the Lord who are worshipped both by demigods and by demons reside in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. Bhagavatam 2:9-10. Iti samchintya bhagavan mahakarunako hari dashayam asalokam swam gopanam tamasa param satyam jnanam anantam yad brahma jyoti sanatanam jandi pashanti muriyoganapaye samahita. After deeply considering the all-merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari revealed to the cowherd man his abode, which is beyond material darkness. Lord Krishna revealed the indestructible spiritual effulgence, which is unlimited, conscious, and eternal. Sages see that spiritual existence in trance when their consciousness is free of the modes of material nature. Bhagavatam, text 10:28-14:15. Now in text 14-19, Uttara similarly explains in a general way, the transcendental existence of Vaikuntha. The Lord's impersonal effulgence faintly reflects the spiritual atmosphere of Vaikuntha, which is the fullest manifestation of the Absolute Truth. Having re-established a personal relationship with the Lord, pure Vaishnavas attain Vaikuntha. Impersonalists, however, at best attain the Brahma-jyoti effulgence, where they realize their eternal existence without knowing their relationship with the Lord, or the ecstatic pleasure that comes from serving him in that relationship. In other words, the Vaikuntha atmosphere is a super intensified version of the Brahma-jyoti sky. And thus, the life enjoyed by the Lord's devotees in Vaikuntha is much more wonderful than the comparatively insignificant pleasure of merging into the Brahma-jyoti. Text 15, Tatra Shri Krishna Padabja, Sakshat Seva Sukham Siddha, Bhavudanu Bhavantaste, Ramante Dikkrita Amritam. Pure devotees living in Vaikuntha enjoy forever in varied ways the happiness of directly serving Shri Krishna's lotus feet. In comparison, the nectar of liberation appears condemned. Purport. For the residents of Vaikuntha, God is not a distant abstraction. They see him always and serve him directly. For them, that service is never tedious or degrading, but it is always sheer enjoyment. Jnana bhaktas teshve ke, shuddha bhakta para pare pare, prema bhakta pare prema, para prema tura pare. Among the Supreme Lord's devotees, some are devotees of test.
One categorization.
Among the Supreme Lord's devotees, some are devotees attached to knowledge, and others are pure. Still others are situated in love of God. Others are immersed in love of God, and yet others are painfully overwhelmed by love of God. Commentary. Vaishnavas develop their love of God to different extents, and thus in any given lifetime attain different destinations. Jnana Bhaktas cultivate devotional service mixed with the pursuit of knowledge. Their interests focus on subjects such as the greatness of devotion to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. For them, devotional service consists of activities within the ninefold practice of sadhana bhakti. An example of such a Vaishnava is Lord Rishabhdev's son, Bharat Maharaj.
When we talked about this last year upstairs in your place, what's a Jnana Bhakta?
Yes.
What did we conclude?
Like this, he's more interested in the pursuit of knowledge of bhakti rather than the practice of bhakti.
Jnana bhaktis cultivate devotional service mixed with the pursuit of knowledge. Their interests focus on subjects such as the greatness of devotion to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. For them, devotional service consists of activities within the ninefold practices of sadhana bhakti. An example of such a Vaishnava is Lord Rishabhdev's son, Bharat Maharaj. Next, Shuddha bhaktas want only devotional service to the personality of Godhead, without any mixture of fruit of work, knowledge, or renunciation. Ambarish Maharaj is a typical Shuddha bhakta. Prema bhaktas like Sri Hanuman are endowed with mature ecstatic love. They perpetually serve the Lord with full-hearted enthusiasm, being interested only in the loving affection, intimate association, and opportunities for service that they find at the lotus feet of their beloved Supreme Master. Still, other devotees are Premapara Bhaktas, like Sriman Arjuna and his brothers. They are not interested in the process of bhakti itself, but only in Prema, ecstatic love. By the causeless mercy of the Lord, entirely pure Prema of the highest quality has arisen in their hearts, binding them by ropes of eagerness to see the Lord and enjoy friendly talks and other intimate dealings with Him. Finally, Prematura bhaktas, such as the Yadavas, headed by Sriman Uddhava, are overwhelmed by the incessant bliss of Prema and the intense desire to relish all the transformations of that Prema and its related ecstasies. Although everyone in Vaikuntha has Prema, we must recognize different degrees of Prema. The natural perfection of Shuddha Bhakti is Prema Bhakti, which is higher because devotees who have reached Prema have special qualities not found in those who have attained only Shuddha Bhakti. And beyond Prema Bhakti, the Prema Para devotees are more elevated, and the Prematura devotees still more.
Pretty good, isn't it? We'll come back again.
Yeah, I said.
What's that?
I'm asking, we'll wait.
No, it's okay. I wanted to see if this chair would fit through the door. But really, my body is...
That won't fit.
Yes.
Want to push on?
No, okay. I'll surrender.
Taratami Yavatami Sham Pale Samyam Nayujate Taratamyam Duvaikunte Katanche Katate Nahi. Since the levels of these devotees are various, it seems unfitting that the results they achieve be the same. But in Vaikuntha, no hierarchies exist.
This is Parikshit Maharaj?
Uttara.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Uttara is asking her questions now. She wants to get it straight. Mm-hmm.
Commentary. Without higher and higher levels of enjoyment and realization of the greatness of God, the five different levels of bhakti would be incomplete. To award the same results to devotees of differing levels of attraction would not befit the perfect and all-compassionate personality of Godhead. And how could all the Lord's devotees be satisfied by only one kind of reciprocation? Thus, there is a need for hierarchy in the varieties of devotion and the corresponding moods in which the Lord reciprocates. In Vaikuntha, however, such a hierarchy is impossible to find because the atmosphere of that place is purely spiritual. So there can't be a pure spiritual hierarchy?
No, but read on. <All right. laughs> Read on.
Paryavasyati sarubhya samipyado chatulyata nashuyate param prapyam Vaikuntha adhikam kiyat. It follows that among devotees in Vaikuntha there is equality, even in the special Vaikuntha perfections, such as living near the Supreme Lord or attaining a form like his. And a goal higher than Vaikuntha is unheard of. Commentary. Someone might think that even though all devotees in Vaikuntha share equally in the bliss of serving the personality of Godhead, some hierarchy of greater and lesser engagements can be discerned. Indeed, it seems that in Vaikuntha, the Lord's pastime of supreme rulership and opulence, pastimes of supreme rulership and opulence are manifest more fully to some devotees than to others. Just as in the material world, the Lord is more intimately revealed to devotees who worship him by Brahma Sutra, the sacrifice of transcendental knowledge, then to those who worship him at the grosser level of Kama Sutra, mere ritual sacrifice. In Vaikuntha, some devotees, such as those stationed as doorkeepers at the boundaries of the Lord's kingdom, seem to be relative outsiders compared to devotees who have more intimate services, such as massaging the Lord's lotus feet. Ultimately, however, in Vaikuntha, all these varieties of devotional service are equal, displaying but minor variations in the mood of dasyaras in reverence. The many kinds of Vaikuntha perfection are equal manifestations of the same basic servitude. Those perfections include sarupya, having a transcendental body with four arms and other features, like the Lord's, and samipya, living close to the Lord as one of his associates or servants. There are also other perfections. Those others implied in this verse by the ending adau in the word samipyadau are attainments such as being posted as commander of the Lord's army, or as a personal servant massaging the Lord's feet or dressing his hair. The perfection of sayujya, merging into the existence of God, is prized by impersonalists, but is not found in Vaikuntha. Rather than a devotional perfection, sayujya is a form of impersonal liberation. Even demons who hate the personality of Godhead are sometimes given sayujya as a reward for constantly meditating on the Lord as an enemy. But anyone who has tasted devotional service to the Supreme Lord rejects sayujya. Someone might ask, but can a devotee in Vaikuntha achieve some special perfection by virtue of being exceptionally qualified? No, this verse replies. Since Vaikuntha is a place in which all desires are fulfilled, nothing there beyond the perfections already easily available remains to it to be achieved. Tatpradesha visheshu swabhava visheshataha swasa priya visheshatya sarvesham astuva sukham. Of course, all the devotees in each distinct region of Vaikuntha are completely happy, for they have all achieved what by their own specific natures they desire. Commentary. Granting that devotees in select parts of Vaikuntha are empowered to enjoy special privileges according to their unique devotional moods, there may still remain doubt about where the most confidential devotees of the Lord reside. Within the realm of Vaikuntha, a few special places do exist, such as Ayodhya and Dwarka, where more intimate forms of pure devotional service are manifest. For each replica abode of the Lord on earth, there is an original abode in Vaikuntha. As stated in scripture, yayata bhuvivartante purya bhagavata priyaha tastata santi vaikunte tattalilartam adritaha. On this earth, there are many sacred cities dear to the personality of Godhead. And all of them also exist in Vaikuntha, where they are revered for their importance in the Lord's various pastimes. Mother Uttar is speaking as if the liberated devotees of Vaikuntha represent all five varieties of Vaishnavas: Jnana Bhaktas, Shuddha Bhaktas, Prema Bhaktas, Prema Para Bhaktas, and Prematura Bhaktas. In fact, however, she speaks without much conviction, because as far as she understands, the devotees of Vaikuntha are not divided into such categories. Param kastam gatam tad rasa jati yatochitam atapi rasa kritta drig bhaktanam astuka gati. They have all attained the ultimate limit of happiness, each in his own kind of ecstatic reciprocation with the Lord. But what place is destined for the exceptional devotees of the performer of the rasa dance? Commentary. Well, someone might ask, if there is a hierarchy of greater and lesser devotees in Vaikuntha, then only some of them are fully happy. Is that proper? Aren't devotees of the Supreme Lord, especially those who have attained Vaikuntha, greater than mere liberated souls? Don't they enjoy the highest happiness above that of liberation? The current verse clears this doubt. All the residents of Vaikuntha enjoy incomparable happiness, but some gradation of happiness still exists, because each devotee relishes a mixture of ecstasies that make up his individual devotional mood or rasa. It is natural, therefore, that according to a devotee's sthayi bhava, the predominating mood of his ecstatic rasa, he receives a particular degree and kind of happiness. Nonetheless, each devotee thinks that his happiness is perfect and complete because it exactly suits his personality. Having acknowledged this, Mother Uttara next expresses her own doubt about the devotee of Krishna, whose spontaneous love for the Lord is greater than all of the varieties of prema. In Vaikuntha, is there a special place where those devotees can enjoy the supreme happiness they deserve? Within Uttara's question are the following implications. The Shuddha Bhaktas, in their worship of the Supreme Lord, enjoy greater ecstasy than the Jnana Bhaktas. Although the devotees in Vaikuntha find themselves in a hierarchy that would normally cause envy, quarrel, and other kinds of conflict, those devotees are free from jealousy and other faults, which are the root causes of pain and lamentation. Without this purity, they could not reside in Vaikuntha, being affectionately attached to one another in sublime prema. They all feel ever-increasing happiness in their worship of the Lord. As mentioned already, the Shuddha Bhaktas, whose devotion to the Lord does not depend on the pleasure of life in Vaikuntha, are higher than the more conditional Jnana Bhaktas. That being so, what about the status of devotees still more elevated? What about the Lord's best servants, the Prema Bhaktas, who are indifferent to all possible selfish concerns? What about the Lord's supreme friends, the Prema Para Bhaktas, who receive his unconditional special favor? And what about his closest loved ones, the Prematura Bhaktas, who are bound by the most intimate relationships with the Lord and who live only for his satisfaction? What special place can be found in Vaikuntha for those super excellent devotees? The Skanda Purana explains that exceptional regions do exist in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha has transcendental cities such as Ayodhya and Dwarka, which, like their counterparts on earth, are filled with the Supreme Lord's personal associates and paraphernalia. In those supreme places, the Lord is always present in his most attractive forms. Thus, for example, in the Ayodhya region of Vaikuntha, devotees of the standard of Hanuman constantly see the Lord of the Raghus, Lord Ramachandra, attended by Sri Sita, Lakshman, and the rest of his entourage. Those devotees continue to enjoy the happiness of being his servants, just as they did while present with the Lord during his pastimes on earth. And their ambitions are fulfilled in every conceivable way. Similarly, in the Dwarka of Vaikuntha, devotees like Sri Yudhisthira and his family worship Krishna as the darling son of Devaki, the friend of Arjuna, the younger brother of Balaram, the beloved of Rukmini and Satyabhama. The Pandavas continue to serve Krishna in their own homes with the same friendship as during his avatar. and also in Dwarka, the Yadavas, including exalted souls like Uddhava, worship and serve Krishna as their own master, regarding him as more valuable than their wealth, their power, and their very lives. In the endless, manifold transformations of pure love, the Yadavas, their inner and outer consciousness, are charged with bliss, enjoy as much happiness as they desire. In Vaikuntha, these devotees enjoy life just as they did when present with their most dear Lord on the earth, where they enjoy the supreme good fortune of serving his lotus feet, receiving his mercy, relishing pure love for him, and sharing in his pastimes. That the Supreme Lord's earthly and Vaikuntha pastimes have these features in common does not diminish the greatness of the spiritual world, because whether in the material or spiritual world, all the Lord's devotees are objects of his infinite compassion. Even if devotees occupy higher and lower positions, the differences pale beside the inconceivable, desirable, overwhelming ecstasies of pure love of God. Still, we should recognize a natural hierarchy in the varieties of devotional service. Because Jnanabhaktas harbor some attachment to knowledge, the pure ecstasies of prema do not develop in their hearts, even while they live in Vaikuntha.
Huh? So.
The transcendental happiness they deserve is confined mostly to their mental activities. Shuddha Bhaktas enjoy greater happiness, which enlivens all their senses through hearing and chanting about the Lord, remembering him, and so on. And Prema Bhaktas feel even greater happiness through all their internal and external senses, because while seeing the Lord and serving him in various ways, they constantly meditate on him with love. Prema Para Bhaktas cherish yet a higher standard of happiness, which they taste in their friendly dealings with the Lord, in their talking freely with him, and in their intense moods of separation and meeting. That transcendental happiness floods their entire being. And Prematura Bhaktas know the ultimate extreme of happiness. They are immersed in the unending and most intense loving expectation of seeing the Lord, sharing pastimes with him, and exchanging countless intimate dealings with him. Every fiber of their existence is surcharged with such happiness, which always exceeds their greatest expectations. Therefore, since various levels of sadhana bring various degrees of perfection, it is undeniable that in Vaikuntha, where happiness reaches its ultimate limits, some devotees enjoy more happiness and some less. When he's speaking of Vaikuntha, is he including the whole thing?
Dwarka, Ayodhya.
And Goloka Vrindavan?
Sometimes.
That's what he... So these different levels are covering the whole spiritual world, or just Vaikuntha? Oh, now I got it. I thought he was just talking about literally.
He's just talking Aishwarya.
Yeah, I thought he was just referring to.
No.
Okay, now it becomes clear. I was wondering what's going on.
It's forever, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's speaking of the whole spiritual world as one unit.
Now you can, at least I cannot figure this out from above.
Yeah,
in this way, isn't it?
In this way.
Well, in this systematic way, and what to speak of with the names, the Jnana Bhaktas, the Shuddha Bhaktas, the Prema Bhaktas, Prematura Bhaktas, and so on.
Yeah, this part especially is very elaborate. This.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more. I'm just saying it's so. He just, you know, puts Bhagavatam Nita.
And in the final issue, those who practice the highest mode of the Lord's devotional service achieve one last extreme of perfection, the ecstasy known only by those whose love focuses exclusively on the lotus feet of the divine paramour of the gopis. Relative to this, the position of all other devotees is inferior. The nature of Vaikuntha, the spiritual kingdom, is such that each devotee, regardless of his mood of devotion, feels that in pursuing the tendencies of his heart in his own relationship with the Lord, the happiness he tastes is unsurpassable. Still, Uttara wants to know what special destination awaits the Lord's most exceptional devotees, those overflowing with spontaneous love for the lotus feet of Sri Nand Kishore.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see where different people, different Vaishnavas go. Prema Parabhaktas, Prema Tulbhaktas, because they were described. Prema Bhaktas, I think it was Hanuman, that's right. And Prema Parabhaktas is Arjuna, etc. And Prema Tura is Uddhav and the others. So, Prema Parabhaktas, Prema Tura Bhaktas, they're there in Dwarka, so that they have their place. And Hanuman and so on are there in Ayodhya. And then there's the Shuddha Bhaktas and Jnana Bhaktas. There are those who are worship the Lord.
Who is the Shuddha Bhakta?
The Shuddha Bhakta is Amrish
Maharaj. Maharaj, right?
Yeah. And Jnana Bhakta is Bharat Maharaj. Yeah. One place that, although it gets mentioned, it never gets detailed description, is Purushottam Kshetra, which is Jagannath Puri. And towards the end, Narayana tells Gopa Kumar to go there, but the Nudra says, no, he doesn't have to do that, he should just go back to earth, just go back to the bridge. And but it says there that everyone's absorbed in hearing in celebrations, festivals of Krishna's pastimes, Braj pastimes.
Where is this? Braj.
Huh?
Where is this?
Here in the book later on. That's how it's described. That everyone's always enjoying these festivals. It says you'll be better off there than in Dwarka. It's about Dwarka.
What's about Dwarka?
Purushottam
Kshetra. Oh, okay.
It's about Dwarka. I don't know what category people...
Above Dwarka, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you said, I wasn't sure if you said above or about.
No, not above, yeah. Yeah. It's above Dwarka before Goloka. Anyway. Just wondering which of those category devotees also go there. Anyway, it's fantastic.
So here it ends up saying the nature of Vaikuntha, the spiritual kingdom, is such that each devotee, regardless of his mood of devotion, feels that in pursuing the tendencies of his heart in his own relationship with the Lord, the happiness he tastes is unsurpassable. And made me wonder, the only time I've heard Prabhupada ever talk about it, during the Gopi Bhava controversy in L.A., one of the questions, because I saw the questions and answers, the questions to Prabhupada and his answers at, right after the meeting. It was all printed up. One of the questions they asked him was, can you change your rasa?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
He said, generally, what you are, generally speaking, but it can change. You remember that also?
Yeah, I remember hearing that. I remember hearing it, and I remember it was being discussed. Somehow it just sticks in my mind. At that time, I don't remember how
I've
registered it, but I definitely remember it being discussed.
But the theme here will be that everyone's happy where they are. They don't want to go from one to the other. But Gopa Kumar is, of course, he already has that feeling.
He already has.
Right in the beginning.
But he had that. It was stimulated by the chanting of the mantra. It was already there.
Yeah.
He was stimulated by his Gopa.
Jesus looking for a man Gopa, that's right from the beginning. He wasn't interested in others.
Okay, now the next question, which is naturally to be asked, was why?
Why what?
Why was death there in his heart? I mean, why that and not something else?
This is a swarup.
That's the question people ask.
Then God. God from his. That's the same thing as asking about the origin of the jiva.
Yeah.
If you can't get into one, you got to get into the other.
Is it because? No, I'm not going to go there.
Was he originally there? That's what she was.
Originally, or was it? There. Was it inspired by the mantra? I mean, it was inspired by the mantra, obviously, but was it inspired by the person who delivered the mantra?
Yeah, or was it that he's in the Tathagata region and he's observing Krishna's pastimes, he has a proclivity for a particular type of relationship, which he then turns away from.
From Tathagata.
From Tathagata. Oh, I wish I... Holy Brahman Vaishnava, do you have that here?
Yeah, I have it right here. Mine.
Do you have it on another, on your telephone?
My telephone's recording.
Oh. It's probably not here.
So you want me, you want to look at it here?
No, I don't want to disturb you.
You have a reference there?
Page 80.
Well, I don't think it's numbered anyways.
No.
Way I have it.
Indifferent is what? 15 times uses indifferent.
Indifferent. How the living entity is from Tathagata is indifferent. Is that what he said?
Just his description. Because, very far. What's on the search with that one? He's talking about of learning that comes into the third one. But the stages, the more interesting thing is the stages. I mean, I'll read it if you
can. What's that?
I can get it right here. If you search it, then just...
Indifferent? Search.
Yeah, just put in indifferent, I'll find which one it is. I thought I'd already shown you. Just the stages of whatever the origin is, but the certain phases of development or degradation, put it that way, jayato vishap, of how that takes place is really amazing. And he explains how Mayavad philosophy is connected to the living entity coming into the material world. Is it there?
If I have my Kindle, I could have found it for you pretty quickly. I'm still waiting for that Kindle. This doesn't work quite the same way as an ordinary Kindle. I'll have to take a few minutes to find it.
Oh, I have one.
Not a few minutes, but let's. Hankering for the kindle. Better be careful.
Hankering for the kindle. That searches quickly?
Well, no, it just, the kindle has all the book covers, it displays them all so you can immediately, but this somehow doesn't show the covers. See?
Really?
None of the covers in there, I don't know why.
There's something's not right. I see all the covers on
them. It's some glitch. No covers. I have to guess what book they are. I have to open each one up to see what book they are. Oh, Brahman Vaishnava. I found it. Okay. So look up indifferent?
Becomes indifferent.
Becomes indifferent?
Well, just indifference or indifferent.
Indifferent. Naturally indifferent.
Let me search once. There's quite a few, but I'll know which one is. Well, how do you?
Yeah, right here. These are all the findings of indifferent.
Okay. Should I read?
Sure.
I'll read slowly. Before acquiring material designation, the living entity is supremely pure. Even though he's not engaged in serving the Supreme Lord, he remains situated in the neutral position of Shantaras due to his marginal nature. Though the living entity, born from the marginal potency, does not at that time exhibit a taste for serving the Lord due to a lack of knowledge of self-realization, his direct propensity of serving the Supreme Lord nevertheless remains within him in a dormant state.
Born? What was the word? Born of us? Born?
No.
Living entity born what? You just read it.
Though the living entity born from the marginal potency.
Born from the marginal potency.
Does not at that time.
What does that mean?
Well, let me read it then. I'll read it. It's just a paragraph.
Okay.
Living entity born from the marginal potency does not at that time exhibit a taste for serving the Lord due to a lack of knowledge of self-realization. His direct propensity of serving the Supreme Lord nonetheless remains with him in a dormant state. Though the indirect propensity of material enjoyment, which is contrary to the service of the Lord, is not found in him at that time, indifference to the service of Hari and the seed of material enjoyment which follows the state of indifference are nevertheless present within him. As he's Shantaras, the Shantaras becomes a cause of fall down.
Because of indifference to service.
Because he's indifferent. The living entity who belongs to the marginal potency cannot remain indifferent forever. By subduing both devotional and non-devotional propensities, he therefore contemplates unconstitutional activities from his marginal position. As a sleeping person dreams that he is active in the physical world without actually being involved in activities, when the dormant, indifferent living entity of the marginal potency exhibits even a little apathy, Krishna Bahimukha, to the service of the Supreme Lord, and situates himself in a neutral, unchanging condition for even a little time, he's infected by impersonalism. That is why the conditioned soul desires to merge in the impersonal Brahman, thus exhibiting his mind's fickle nature. But due to neglecting the eternal service of the Lord and thereby developing the quality of aversion to the Lord, he cannot remain fixed in that position. It's this way, aversion to the Lord bakes his concentration of mind and establishes him as the master of this world of enjoyment. And then he continues how the living entity gets involved in Maya. Maya, the external energy of the Supreme Lord, then induces the marginal living entity to enjoy this world through her covering and throwing potencies, and thus shows the living entity the reality of being averse to the Lord's service. It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just these different stages. Indifference, and then comes the which is followed by the seed of enjoyment, and then impersonalism, and degrades into materialism.
But what is it born of marginal potency?
Argue about it. Huh? And argue about it.
I'm not going to argue. I know better.
But was it in the living entity seeing Krishna in that Tathasta Shakti?
Seeing Krishna. And it's not for us. He's observing Krishna.
According to this explanation.
Vanuraj told me that Baladeva's explanation to Vedanta Sutra talks about living entities in the spiritual world without even bodies.
Without?
Bodies. Without bodies and without even tasting bliss.
Without bodies? So how do they exist there without bodies?
They exist bodiless.
But the soul's eternal.
Yeah. Well, I guess here, just like, for instance, if you didn't have a body.
Yeah, but that's a ghost body. That's a subtle body.
Well, if you don't have a subtle body, it's just as soul. Just as undeveloped soul, in other words. It's not Swarup is not manifest. I think it was
just the kind of stuff that my mind starts zoom. But I know better than to argue.
Anyway, that was something. You'll find it on page 80 if you have the book, or if you just hit indifference. Then it's the third or fourth indifferent.
Okay. Who's reading?
One of us was.
I think you were.
I just finished. It was a long paper.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Ye sarva narapikshena radha dasi chavaparam sankirtayanti tannama tadrisha priyatamaya. They chant his names and are full of unique love for him, indifferent to everything else. They want only to become servants of Sri Radha. The devotees of Sri Radha, who is the dear most beloved of Lord Madan Gopal, are not impersonal, void of desires. They are fully confident that if Sri Radha accepts them as her servants, everything they desire will be achieved and more. The privilege of serving Sri Radha is the rarest goal of life, and it is fitting that this privilege be attainable only by executing the most excellent of sadhanas. That is to say, one can please her divine grace only by sacrifice of purely chanting the names of Sri Rasa Rasika, the hero of the Rasa dance. In sweet voices, the servants of Sri Radha always melodiously and loudly chant Krishna's names. Such devotees are worthy to engage in such elevated service because their hearts are filled with the supreme variety of spontaneous ecstatic love from Krishna. Anyesham Yipatesham Cha Prapyam Cha Virinna Trikkiti Ahonanda Yashodadhir Nasahirtadvishin Tim. If those special devotees attain only the same perfection as others, my heart will be left discontent. For such devotees in Nanda and Yashoda to reach only the same destination, to me the way thought is intolerable. Commentary. Someone might propose that Sri Mathurapuri, like Ayodhya and Dwarka, may be located in Vaikuntha. The devotees of Radha and Krishna may thus have their Vaikuntha Goloka, where they can enjoy pastimes with the Lord and feel happiness greater than that of the Yadavas, just as the Yadavas enjoy happiness greater than that of the Pandavas. Uttara, however, is not satisfied with this proposal. She cannot tolerate having the devotees of Gokula categorized with other ordinary Vaishnavas.
I know.
I didn't say it.
Yeah, I know, but who did say it? That's the question.
Huh?
Of course, I'm wondering who did say it.
So Sanatana.
Yeah, I know it's Sanatana, but still ordinary Vaishnavas.
No, Prabhupada repeatedly uses the word neophyte for regulated devotional service. Vividha, and obviously all regulated devotees are not neophytes. Vividhanam mahinam hi yatra kashtaya parapara kotinam paryavashyanti samudre sharitojita. Very and countless excellences flow into those devotees like rivers into the ocean. Commentary. All varieties of perfection are fully manifest in the devotees of Gokula. Those devotees are perfectly beautiful, charming, and graceful, and they are endowed with the valuable assets of religious duty, economic development, sense gratification, renunciation, knowledge, realization, devotion, and pure love of God. All these perfections are present within them to the utmost degree possible for finite living beings. Whenever Srivihara Bhagavatamrita depicts the glories of devotees lesser than the residents of Gokula, its purpose is to highlight the greater glories of the Gokulavasis and demonstrate that all varieties of excellence flow ultimately into the residents of Gokula, just as the waters of all rivers flow at last into the ocean. Tadartam ujitam stanam ekam vaikum tata param apekshitam avasyam syat tatra kashyo darashtram maam. Therefore, a suitable place must surely exist for them beyond Vaikuntha. Please reveal it to me and rescue me.
What does it mean beyond Vaikuntha? I thought we were discussing it in Vaikuntha.
But they use it different.
They're using it different context here.
Sometimes Vaikuntha means just Narayan's abode. Sometimes it includes Dwarka and Ayodhya. Sometimes it includes Goloka as well.
So it could be confusing to the casual reader.
That could. This book isn't for casual readers. In this verse, Mother Uttara sums up her inquiry. She reasons that there must be some place, even greater than Vaikuntha, a place suitable for the enjoyment of devotees like Srinanda and Yasoda. That place should have certain qualifications. It should be devoid of thought that the Lord is the supreme, all-powerful controller. In other words, it should be free from all irreverence. It should be untainted by flaws that impede the growth of ecstatic love. It should be invisible to those who are addicted to dry knowledge. And it should be approachable only by those dearmost servants of the Lord who delight in being caught under the sway of a prema untasted in this world or any other. That place should be the quintessence of attractiveness, a place fully enriched with the unique indescribable bliss of transcendental rasa. It should be sweeter than the sweet, superior to the superior, describable only by great saints who forever relish the taste of Sri Krishna's lotus feet, saints like Narad, for surely he must sing the glories of that place with his veena. Such a unique place must certainly exist with our things. But because it is most confidential, and I'm not very intelligent, I'm unable to ascertain its identity. She's pretty intelligent.
Yeah. She's already describing it, that's the thing. This is already describing that place. If you say, but because I'm not qualified, I don't understand it.
Therefore, lost in a notion of sadness and waves of doubt and deep currents of confusion, she asked her son Pariksit to reveal that place to her by describing it in words. By doing this, he will lift her out of the ocean of sorrow. Of course, the blessed district of Mathura, the blessed of all places, already manifest on earth and can most certainly provide Srinanda and others the exceptional happiness of taking part in the world's wonderful pastimes. But Uttara has doubts because that Mathura is within the material world. Thus, she's asking whether another transcendental location exists for the pastimes of Krishna and his favorite devotees. To external vision, the modern residents of the earthly Mathura seem subject to the bodily transformations of disease, old age, and death, and so appear entangled in mundane illusion. Unlike the Lord's abode in Vaikuntha, the Mathura on earth does not seem to award immediate perfection to everyone who merely steps into it. So Uttara doubts whether the earthly Mathura is in fact the ultimate goal of human endeavor. And she suspects that at the time of the universal annihilation or of the partial annihilation of the three middle planetary systems, the district of Mathura may disappear. This question raised by Mother Uttara, although subtle and therefore difficult, will gradually be answered by Pariksit. I wonder who's using the word mother here. This is Sanatana Uttara Mother. It's nice to see the Sanskrit because this also addresses another issue.
Mm.
This question raised by Mother Uttara, although subtle and therefore difficult, will gradually be answered by Pariksit through the story of Gopakumar. First, Pariksit will describe Shiva-loka in the spiritual world as the destination of Krishna's most intimate devotees, and then he will speak about the pleasure pastimes Krishna performs, both there and in the material realm of earth. Although the earthly Mathura is located within the material realm, it remains untouched by the influence of illusion, just as the Supreme Lord himself, his devotees and his pastimes, remain unaffected by illusion when they descend to the material world. As Sri Narayana Muni will state later in Sri Vriha Bhagavatamrita, Nana vidastasya parichada jai namani li la priya bhumayascha satyani nityani akilani tadvad ekani anekani chatani vidhi. All the paraphernalia of the Lord's service, including his names, his pastimes, his favorite abodes, assume various forms. You should understand that just as each of these forms is eternally real, each is simultaneously one and many. Yogamaya, the spiritual energy of the Lord, arranges for the present-day residents of Mathura to appear to undergo material transformations. The Lord's spiritual energy does this to delude the non-devotees and satisfy the Lord's devotees, just as she prevents non-devotees from feeling ecstasy even after having personal audience of the Lord, the embodiment of the highest bliss. This subject will be explained later in the narration of Gopakumara's sojourn in Tapaloka. That the glories of earthly Mathura are hidden from ordinary eyes indicates the greatness of that abode. Indeed, the earthly Mathura and its glories are eternal. They are not destroyed even when the universe is annihilated. Devotees who think that Mathura may in the future disappear are mistaken, because in fact Mathura is beyond destruction even by the Lord's ultimate divine weapon, the Sudarshan Disc, which is the governing force underlying material time, the destroyer of the worlds. All the same, Mother Uttara is asking about some other supreme place because the greatness of earthly Mathura is not at once perceived, and because many people have not heard about the wonderful activities the personality of Godhead displays there. In fact, the glories of the earthly Mathura in some ways surpass those of the spiritual planet Goloka. And Sri Vriha Bhagavatamrita therefore will describe how Gopakumara, after realizing glories of Goloka, learned about this from Sri Narayana. The original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, descends to Mathura in this world with all his beauty and other attributes to exhibit unprecedented playful activities. And when the entire universe or the three middle planetary systems are destroyed, the earthly Mathura becomes invisible and reaches back into Sri Goloka. In other words, Mathura is not destroyed, it remains unchanged above the wheel of time. But because the Lord's pastimes are they no longer perceivable in Mathura on earth, it seems that the personality of Godhead continues to enjoy himself only in the corresponding spiritual realm, Goloka. And so Sri Goloka is considered the ultimate destination of spiritual endeavor. Sri Narad may sometimes ascribe to Mathura on earth glories even greater than those of Goloka, but that is not contradictory, since the two places are in essence non-different. Whatever is said about one of them is true of the other.
Sri Janani Uvacha.
So, just to, because this is always repeated so many times, that Mathura is not destroyed. But the fact is, just said here, that when the canvas on which material world, Mathura is being projected on, when that disappears, Mathura merges back into the original Goloka Vrindavan.
You repeat that?
It says here.
Yeah, Mathura, it says does not destroy.
It's not destroyed.
Yeah.
And when the entire universe or the three planetary systems are destroyed, the earthly Mathura becomes invisible and merges back into Sri Goloka.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Mathura is not destroyed.
It's not destroyed because it merges back into Goloka, right. But it's not visible to anyone.
There's no place for it to be visible on because it's gone.
So
what it would be visible on is no longer present.
Then how is it perceivable?
It's not.
But it is perceivable by those who have the eyes to see.
But they're seeing that.
They're seeing that.
Which they can see. And the material world, Mathura is present, Vrindavan is present, and it's present fully in its glory, but it's covered. Yogamaya makes it seem like an ordinary place. But when this material world upon which it manifests, when it disappears, then it says that it merges back into Goloka.
When it disappears, meaning Avyakta?
Material universe, when the entire universe or the three middle planetary systems are destroyed.
Avyakta.
Well, when the material world is destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have a question here. Earlier in the purport it says, in fact, the glories of the earthly Mathura in some ways surpass those of the spiritual planet Goloka. And then at the end it says, since Sri Narada may sometimes ascribe to Mathura on earth glories even greater than those of Goloka, but that is not contradictory, since the two places are in essence non-different. Whatever is said about one of them is true of the other.
Hmm.
Is there a question there?
How does that reconcile with, in fact, the glories of the earthly Mathura in some ways surpass those of the spiritual planet Goloka? Then Sri Narada may sometimes ascribe greater glories, but that is not contradictory. Because the two places are in essence non-different, therefore if you say Mathura on earth is...
So how can one surpass the other? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Well, I guess it can't be, it's not contradiction, because if you're glorifying Mathura on earth, you're glorifying Mathura of Goloka.
It's the same place, but some manifesting some things here that aren't manifest there.
What's his name? Kavi Kanapur says the same thing in Ananda Vrindavan Champa about the superiority of Mala Vrindavan as opposed to Goloka Vrindavan.
Yeah.
But then the conclusion here is, since the two places are in essence not different, whatever is said about one of them is true of the other. So what Narada does in ascribing greater glories to Mathura is not contradictory.
Yeah.
sense, they're the same. The difference is where they manifest. When Goloka is there in the spiritual world, whereas the presence of Vrindavan, Bhoma Vrindavan, the presence of Vrindavan in the material world gives added attraction to Goloka for different reasons, because of the contrast, the nature of Krishna's lila, the actual contrast between being in the material world and in the spiritual world, rather than it's Nara lila, but it's still Nara lila in the spiritual world. This is Nara lila amongst Nara, amongst men, and everything else that's going on here. Here there's real suffering going on. There it's just ecstasy in the guise of suffering. And other such things that we'll read about later on. We can set out the GBC meetings. turn quickly.
Yes, that's what Brahmins are supposed to do.
Really, they're supposed to let the state go to hell and sit around and read Shastra.
It's going to go to hell anyway. I bet not later.
Should someone continue on? Continue on? Who was reading him?
I am. Oh. I think. I remember somewhere that I was supposed to start.
25.
Sri Jaimanir Uvacha Matur Eva Maharamya Prasne Na Nandita Sutta Tam Natva Sashuramancham Arebe Patipasitum. Sri Jaimini said, delighted by this most pleasing inquiry from Mother Utra, her son Pariksit bowed down to her and began his reply. Tears poured from his eyes and his bodily hair stood on end. Commentary. Pariksit will begin his reply by complimenting his mother for her excellent question by offering respect to his worshipful Lord. Sri Pariksit Uvacha Sri Krishna Jivate Matas Tadiya virahase sahe tavayava yogya prashnoyam nakrito yascha kashna. Sri Pariksit said, my dear mother, for you who live only for Sri Krishna, separation from him is intolerable. This question of yours is most praiseworthy. No one has ever asked this question before.
No one has ever asked this question.
What's the question again?
Last 20 verses. There must be a better place.
Quite detailed.
Continuing from part one, that the gopis are the best. Yeah. Must be a special place for them.
The essence is she definitely wanted. She couldn't accept that everybody got equal distribution. Considering that some seem to be more inclined towards something superior. Anyways, where was I? Commentary. Pariksit wishes to encourage his mother so that her mind will easily focus what he's about to say. He calls her Sri Krishna Jivita, which means either one who lives only for Sri Krishna or one whom Sri Krishna brought back to life. The second meaning, alluding to Krishna saving the life of Uttara by stopping the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama. Uttara is known for having suffered greatly in separation from Krishna. As Sunita Goswami described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Subhadra Draupadi Kunti Virata Tanayatata Gandhari Jitaratrascha Yusur Gautamo Yama Vikodara Sutamyas Jastriya Matsya Sutadya Nesihire Bhumuyanto Viraham Sangadandana Subhadra Draupadi Kunti Uttara and Gandhari Andhritarashtra Yuyutsu Kripacharya Nakulan Sahade and Bhimasena and Amya and ladies such as the mother, there's a daughter of Matsya, all nearly fainted because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. King Virata, the father of Uttara, was adopted along with his sister Satyavati by a fisherman, Matsya. Since Virata was also called Matsya, the name Matsya Sutta, daughter of a fisherman, can indicate either Satyavati or her niece Uttara. If we take the second of these alternatives, Uttara is mentioned twice in these two verses, indicating that she hankered for Krishna in separation even more intensely than the others. Therefore, it is quite appropriate for her to ask so confidentially about Krishna's devotional service. Tavaiva yogya prashna means the only relevant question is yours, ta'eva. Few other persons would have had the proper devotional attitude to ask such a question. Nijapriya sakasyatra Sri Subhadra Patiraham Yena Pautra Taya Garbhe Tava Sajjanma Lambita. Krishna himself granted me the fortunate privilege to be born here from your womb as the grandson of his dear friend Arjuna, the husband of Sri Subhadra. Parikshit realizes that only by the special mercy of Sri Krishna will he be able to answer his mother's question. And accordingly, he offers his homage to Krishna. In texts 27 through 31, he first describes the favors Krishna showed him throughout his life. In this verse, the word atra here has several related meanings. Parikshit was born in the holy land of Bharatvarsha, in its most pious central region, in the human species, in a dynasty of great kshatriyas, and from the womb of Uttara as the grandson of Krishna's friend Arjuna. His birth was sat, auspicious, because it was connected with Krishna. Krishna protected Parikshit's unborn body from mutilation by the weapon of Ashwatthama, and Parikshit's grandmother was Subhadra, Krishna's sister, not any other of Arjuna's wives. Garbhantare chadritta chakragadinvina Brahmastrato ham avita sahito bhavatya Valiye naresha nijarupa parikshanam cha Ito muhu paramam bhagavato chitam yat. To protect both me and you from the Brahmastra weapon, Krishna appeared within your womb holding his disc and club. In my childhood, he led me to search constantly among men for his own form, a meditation worthy of the most exalted Vaishnavas. Commentary: when Lord Krishna entered the womb of Uttara to protect her embryo, he assumed his forearm form and used both his disc and his club to dispel the Brahmastra. This pastime is described in the first and tenth cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Shatajaksham gadapanim atmana sarvato disham paribrahmantam ukabham brahmayantam gadam uhu. With four long beautiful arms, earrings of fiery gold, eyes blood red with fury, and his club constantly encircling him like a shooting star, the Lord whirled about the child. Janyastra vipushtam idam Bad angam santata vijam kuru pandavanam jugopho kushmin gate atachakro matush chame yasharanam vitaria. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord Sudarshana Chakra in hand entered her womb and saved my body. The body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashwatthama. The sight of the Lord's beautiful form within his mother's womb greatly impressed the unborn Parikshit. Angushta matam amalam spurat purata malinam apibhya darshanam syamam tadit vashasam achutam srimad dhirgachita bahum tapta kanchana kundulam. The Lord was only thumb high, but it was all transcendental. He had a beautiful blackish and fallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. The Lord was enriched with four hands and with earrings of molten gold. Thus he was seen by the child. All through his childhood, Pariksit tried to find the same Lord he had seen in the womb. Whenever he saw a similar-looking person, he would ask himself, is this the same one? Srimad Bhagavatam describes the origin of his name. Sa esha loke vikyata Pariksit iti yat prabhu purvam drishtam anudhyayam Pariksita Nareshriha. He would become famous in the world as Pariksit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search for that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus he would come to constantly contemplate the Lord. In this way, even in early childhood, Pariksit always meditated on the all-attractive form of Sri Krishna.
Yenanuvarti mahatam gunai krito vigyapitoham kali nigrahena sampajaraja shriyam adbutam tato nirvedito vastura shapadapana. By him I was endowed with the qualities of great saints and made famous for subduing Kali. By faithfully following him, I gained wonderful royal opulences. Then, through a Brahmana's curse, he made me renounce everything. Commentary. By Sri Krishna's blessings, Pariksit had many saintly qualities, like selfless care for the people, respect for rabbinical authority, and strict adherence to his promises. These qualities he inherited from his ancestors, who were pious kings. As the Brahmana astrologist told Yudhisthira Maharaj at the time of Pariksit's birth, Parta Prajavita Sakshad Ikshvakur Ivamanava Brahmanya Satyasandascha Ramo Dasharatir Yata. O son of Prita, this child will be exactly like King Ikshvaku, the son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born. And in following the rabbinical principles, especially in being true to his promise, he will be exactly like Rama, the personality of Godhead, the son of Maharaj Dasara. Esha data sharanyascha yata yanu yata yaushinara shibi yasho vitanita swanam dasyantir iva yajvanam. This child will be a magnificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous King Shibi of the Ushinar country. And he will expand the name and fame of his family like Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. Danvinam agranir esha tulyas char junayor dvayo hutasha iva dur darsha Samudra Eva Dustara. Amongst great bowmen, he will be as good as the two Arjunas, Pandava Arjuna and Kartavirya Arjuna. He will be as irresistible as fire and as unsurpassable as the ocean. Magendra Eva Vikranto Nishavyo Himavan Eva Tikshur Vasudevaso Sahishnu Pitaraviva. He will be as strong as a lion and as worthy a shelter as the Himalaya mountains. He will be forbearing like the earth and as tolerant as his parents. Bita maha samat samye prasade girisho pamaha ashraya sarvabhutanam yata devo ramashraya. In equanimity of mind, he will be like his grandfather Yudhisthira or Brahma. He'll be munificent like Shiva, the lord of the Kailasa hill, and he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of God in Narayan, who is even the shelter of the goddess of fortune. Sarvasadguna mahatmye Esha Krishna Anuvrataha Ranti Deva Ivo Dar Yayatya Iva Dharmikaha. The child will be almost as good as Lord Shri Krishna by following in his footsteps. In magnanimity, he will become as great as King Ranti Deva, and in religion, like Maharaj Yayati. Jaja Bali Sama Krishna Parada Iva Sadgraha. He will be like Bali Maharaj in patience, and a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna like Prahlad Maharaj. While on a victory tour of his kingdom, Pritchett came to Kurukshetra on the shore of the east-flowing Saraswati, and there confronted Kali, the personification of the modern age. Kali, in the form of a Shudra, was committing violence against a cow and bull, who were actually the goddess Earth and personified religion. Pritchett subdued Kali, and thus for the duration of his own reign, he limited the spread of Kali's influence. For this accomplishment, he became world famous. By Krishna's grace, Pritchett's rule was a source of amazement to everyone. The kingdom was free from disturbance and abundant in wealth. But Pritchett lost interest in his royal opulence in a moment when cursed by Sringi, the son of the sage Shamika. The Brahmana's son cursed the king thus, Iti langita mayadam takshaka saptamehani dangshati smakula kulangaram choditome tatadruham. On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite that most wretched member of the dynasty because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. Pritchett understood, however, that this curse was also Krishna's arrangement for his benefit. Otherwise, the king would never have committed such an offense against a pure sage. The young son of the sage would never have cursed the king, or Krishna would have empowered the king to neutralize the curse. The immediate effect of the curse was to awaken Pritchett's sense of renunciation. Tashaivamegasya paravarisho vyasakta chitasi grahesa vikshnam nirveda mulo dujasapa rupo yatra prasakto bayam ashudate. The Supreme Personality Godhead, the controller of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, has graciously overtaken me in the form of a Brahmana's curse. Because of my being too attached to family life, the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that only out of fear I will detach myself from the world. Because Pritchett was engrossed in household obligations, he considered himself sinful. But he was grateful that Sri Krishna, just to draw him close, appeared to him in the form of the Brahmana's curse. When an attached person in family life receives such a curse, he naturally becomes frightened. This is auspicious for the conditioned soul, because fear can help inspire renunciation, and in renunciation, Krishna can be achieved. Therefore, Krishna arranged for the Brahmana boy to curse Pritchett.
You go back or something?
Just seeing how much longer the purport ahead is. Tachchisha rupena chamat priyam tam samshravya sapam nilayanda kupa Sri Vasudevena vikrishyanita prayopaveshaya mitimjuna jyam. When I heard of that curse, I took it as most welcome. Sri Vasudev, in the form of a Brahmana's disciple, was dragging me out of the blind well of family life and guiding me to choose to fast till death on the shore of the celestial Ganga. Commentary. By another fortunate circumstance, someone informed Pritchett that he was cursed to die in 7 days. Had Pritchett remained unaware of this news, he would never have gone to the bank of the Ganga to fast in preparation for death. Although Pritchett has poetically described the Brahmana's curse as a cause of fear, the truth is that when Pritchett learned of the curse, he was unfearing and even pleased. He was already hoping for such a reaction to his offense. Thus he says here, Mat Priyam Tam, I took it as most welcome. In the last chapter, the first canon of Srimad Bhagavatam, just before hearing of the curse, Pritchett expressed his mind. Dhruvam tato me krita deva hevana dratyayam vyasanam nati dirghat Tadastu kamam yaga niskritaya me yatana kuyam purnevad da. Due to neglecting the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, I must certainly expect some difficulty to overcome me in the near future. I now desire without reservation that the calamity come directly upon me at once, for in this way I may be freed of the sinful reaction and not commit such an offense again. He wanted the reaction to come immediately without delay, Nati Dirga, and he wanted the punishment to fall directly on himself, Ada, rather than on one of his sons or someone else. Here Pritchett calls his family life a blind well, a well from which he was incapable of lifting himself. Sri Krishna very kindly pulled him out of that well and brought him to the shore of the celestial river Ganga. Krishna, as Lord Vasudeva, the presiding deity of consciousness, also attracted Pritchett's mind to the idea of fasting from food and drink until death. Because the Lord personally took control of him, Pritchett did not remain in his palace and try to counteract the curse by performing yajna, sacrifice, and prayaschitta, atonement for an accidental fall into sinful activity. Krishna is Vasudeva, the super soul of all, and he is the son of Sri Vasudeva, who is a reservoir of supreme compassion and gentleness. Therefore, it was only natural for Krishna to favor his dear devotee Pritchett by arranging such a circumstance.
Well, is it like Maharaj and Arjuna?
Therefore, it was only natural for Krishna to favor his dear devotee by having him cursed. Tough for it.